Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going, run a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on his choke cord. But it's no host bar, middle finger like I'm Stone Cold. What is good, everybody? It is your boy, Weed Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slapping Me to Wrestling podcast. We got a good episode here for you. Before we jump into all that, though, don't forget to use the affiliate links for WWE Shop and Expedia. Not going to bore you with all that nonsense. That's in the description, as well as the Discord link where you can join the conversation around these episodes. That's in the description as well. So let's sort of preview this episode, and then we'll dive on it. And it's sort of give a reason why it's happening, right? Because I didn't plan for this. I didn't plan to be, you know, getting home from watching Vengeance Day Live, getting home today and planning on recording this, right? My plan was either tomorrow, since I'm going to Raw, sort of do like an episode tomorrow morning reacting, or waiting till Friday to sit down and record. And that all changed when I'm about halfway home. So I live in the Charlotte area. I'm coming from DC. It's about a 6-hour drive. I'm about halfway home, and I get this notification from Discord that the Beyond the Junkyard podcast, hosted by my brother and Cody. Well, my brother does a solo episode every now and then, sort of like I do on a weekly basis. And he recorded an episode this morning titled something along the lines of like Grand Slam Australia made the E-Drones mad. And so first off, go check out that podcast. It was a good listen, right? It was a good entertaining listen. So go take a look at that. That gives you context. Now I'm going to respond to that in the second segment. That's the only reason I want to respond to that now before I forget the points that I want to mention, right? But before I respond to that, listening to it made me say, you know what? I want to be fair. So let's go watch Grand Slam. I got home. Well, I got to the hotel after Vengeance Day and was like, you know what? This will start. But then I was like, no, this is going to be on after the All-Star game. Be like 11 o'clock. I got to get up early and drive. So I didn't watch Grand Slam live. So I get home after a 6-hour drive, and I torture myself through this 2-hour episode of Grand Slam. And so I'll say this. Two of the five matches I cared about. And from a casual fan base, the first two matches were really the only two matches I cared about. Right? Tony versus Mariah, didn't really care. Right, this was just Toni Storm's big moment. She gets the title back in her home country. Right, it's the whole reason you go there. Right, Buddy versus Okada, don't really care about. Right, both of these were good matches. Right, Cope and Jay White versus Mox and Claudio. I'm gonna be honest with you. Excuse me, I'm not a big fan, even when WWE does it, of these like brawls type go around the arena things. When it's a tag team, when it's done like one-on-one, it's fine. But when you have like, when it's 2-on-2 and they're in like different parts of the arena and you can't show both parts on screen, and so now I'm missing half of what's happening and the crowd's reacting to something different than what could be on the screen. And so it's one of those things that get really confusing, and it's just me personally. I wasn't, that's what took away from this match, outside of the fact that I don't understand why it's happening. Like, I know that Mox and Cope are fighting, but what's Jay White got to do with it, right? And I'm sure someone, you know, James will respond, will watch the show, keep up. And then I try to keep up with it, but you can see they'll use that excuse. They'll use that reasoning. And it's a fine reasoning. Sure, keep up with the show. But then in the same podcast or the same breath, say, well, we needed this to start when it did so that we could get the NBA lean in or the NBA crowd to roll over into our viewing base. And maybe we can get some of those, right? If that's the crowd you wanted, if you wanted them to the lead in. If you wanted the lead in crowd from the NBA people, they're casuals. They've never watched your programming before, and very little was done in any of these matches to explain why the hell this is happening, right? And so those three matches, the last three matches, were okay to me, right? So let's get those out of the way. So let's talk about the two that I maybe cared about just a little bit. Let's start with the first one, Takeshka and Kyle Fletcher versus Omega and Ospreay, right? Again, none of this starts the show. None of this captures that casual fan base. Maybe Omega's entrance does. It's a little bit better, a little bit big. It screams something that casual fans maybe can lean into. Kyle Fletcher has a look that may be interesting, but outside of that, like, none of this, right? Takeshka just screams generic, bland Asian. Ospreay screams sped that, right? Like, there's a point either in his entrance or during the match where he, like, starts beating on the mat and the crowd's flipping out and they're clapping along to the beat that he's made, and it just comes off as corny and nerdy. And so Ospreay just does nothing for me, right? And then they have their standard AEW style match with a whole bunch of no selling and crazy moves. At one point, Kenny tries to do a poison rana to Takeshka, and Kenny took the brunt force of it. And I will say, I'll give commentary the I think it was Nigel, and funny that it's the WWE guy, Nigel, who has WWE experience on commentary, that pulls the Corey Graves and tries to explain it away and did a very decent job at doing that. At least someone was professional enough to try to explain why Kenny Omega just tried to do a move but then hurt himself, right? Where, like, Takeshka didn't even hit the mat. Like, it was straight Kenny Omega head first, right, with this poison rana. And so good move there by Nigel to try to explain it away with Takeshka play defense type thing. Right. Outside of that, speaking of that, I also like with Kenny's entrance that I don't know who it is. I don't know how long they've been doing this with Kenny, but they kind of do the WWE style entrance now where, like, the camera's behind him as he walks out the curtain. I like how they realize that that's actually good production with WWE. So we're going to use that. And again, that's not something that's a negative. It's they learn that there's something that actually works in the business. Let's actually use it. They should do that a lot more. But the match was fine. It was exactly what I expected it to be, right? It wouldn't be anything that, like, would draw me and hook me in, but for the fan base, it was fine. The match I want to talk about, it may have been the shortest match of the night, and it may have been the least favorite for the AEW fan base, but it was my favorite, and that's Mercedes Moné and Harley Cameron. And to some, that may come to a surprise because I don't really have a lot of positives to say about Mercedes ever. I think outside of wrestling, I think, like, outside of the character, I think she's a little bit big-headed for her – literally big forehead. But I think she her ego's gotten to her. She got on Star Wars. She thinks she's the best. And let's just be honest, she's not. But she's top five X's and O's in the ring in active wrestling, right? I've never once said that she puts on bad matches. She's one of the best women's wrestlers from an X's and O's standpoint in the industry. And from that perspective, AEW is lucky to have her. Where she fails to me is the more important piece to me, which is the promo ability. and she doesn't have that. Like, you should be able to grab a microphone and talk me into watching your match, and she doesn't do it. You know what really made me interested in watching this? Harley Cameron's little skits with the puppet, right? That is what got me interested in and in, into Harley Cameron and wanting to see her beat Mercedes Moné. Which obviously it wasn't going to happen, but so I want to talk about Harley Cameron. I don't care about, again, I don't really break down matches, right? I'm not the type of person like Meltzer or Alvarez or even someone like Cornette, because people would like to call me a corny Cornette drone. I don't even listen to Jim Cornette all that much, right? I like to listen to his opinion on certain things, but right? But even someone like Cornette can get a little bit too much for me when they review shows, because they start going in and they start naming moves, and I don't care about all that, right? At the end of the day, I want to know, like, does the result push the narrative further, right? And so with me, I want to talk about Harley Cameron real quick. And they looked, made her look very, this was a very good match from her standpoint. I got to say something. Harley Cameron needs to be WWE bound whenever her contract's done. I don't care what you need to do, Triple H. This woman has it. And when I say it, I mean the it factor to get over. She's sort of like another Maxine Dupri, where she's not the best in the ring, but she has a good promo ability. She had, right? And she has a look. And that, I think, could get her over in the right system, right? You can't put her in a system where she has to have matches, because that's not going to get her over, because that's not her thing. Now, she's good in the ring. She did very well. She did very well for herself in this match. But she has that WWE look. And if I'm Harley Cameron, I'm using this opportunity, and I'm contacting someone in WWE and saying, look at this. I have an entire stadium. Now, granted, she has the home field advantage. She is from Australia, right? I have an entire stadium chanting my chant that I got over with this puppet. That's fully WWE booking right there. And so when they when people say, oh, we don't like what Vince booked, well, Vince would have booked the puppet, right? That's exactly what Vince would have done. Right. And so Harley Cameron worked for me. She got me into that match. The one thing about that match, though, that segment of the show that confused me was Mercedes picks up the win. She walks outside the ring. Now, she's a heel, right? And she walks past, I guess her name's Momo Watanabe. Momo want to be somebody. I don't know what her name is, right? And they sort of have a little chat, right? And I guess she won something at Dynasty. I don't know. I don't know all of that backstory, right? But from my understanding, they're both heels. Do AEW fans not know how wrestling storytelling works? You can't put two villains to, right? I've always proposed that you could do face versus face. And I think you can. Right, if I did Cody Rhodes versus Jey Uso for the title, I think you could work that out, because both motivations are, you know, Cody wants to maintain his champion, Jey wants to, right? Or, and so you could work that out and say, well, face versus face works because I'm trying to one up, you know, who's the best good guy, who's the best in the ring, right? But when you have a bad guy in as your champion, when you have a bad, like, you couldn't do Gunther versus Roman Reigns and expect people to cheer in that match and someone actually benefiting from it, because you're supposed to, like, who am I supposed to cheer for? Like, there's a method to this, and I know AEW fans and even some in the casual fans say, well, I pay this the ticket price, I should be able to cheer for who I want to and boo who I want to, and that's fine, but there's a way this works, right? The producer is supposed to get you to hate the heel, right? The, you know, imagine in a movie, you're watching a movie, and the producer of a movie says, here's our bad guy. I don't care how you feel about him. You might even like him. Cheer for him. Right? You're not supposed to cheer for the bad guy in the movie. Right? the only difference is when there's like a nuance to it, sort of like Kevin Owens, right? How we're booking Kevin Owens, where he's the bad guy, supposedly, but he's the guy that sort of is logical. He makes sense. Cody Rhodes is actually being painted as the bad guy here, right? As the guy who sort of turns on all his friends, right? And that's a realistic story that we can get behind. But for the most part, you're not supposed to have two bad guys, right? Because even in that story, Kevin Owens is trying to paint himself as the savior that's trying to take down Cody Rhodes, right? So there's still a good and an evil element there, right? You can't have evil versus evil. No one's going to cheer for that. And when they do, then it's no longer evil versus evil because there's a positive reaction to it. So this is just a match for the sake of having a match. And that is why you don't get some of the casual audience to care about your shows. Because that type of logic is missing, right? So let's transition. Let's move over to respond to James's little podcast here. I got a couple points for you that I just want to, right? So he comes out and he starts talking, these people really just hate AEW. He basically says that we critique AEW because we hate it and we want it to die. And I don't know how many times I got to say this. I don't want it to die. I don't. But reality is reality. The product isn't good. The product is, like, objectively, right? If you could, like, people want to say, oh, you're biased with the WWE lens. Like, James, take off the AEW lens. Take off the cocaine-filtered Tony Khan Kool-Aid filtered lenses that you have on that Tony Khan has all AEW fans drinking. And look at the show objectively. It's not good. There's nothing entertaining about it from a storyline perspective, which I'm going to get to that point in a minute. So let's actually get to that point now. Five-star matches do not grow the brand beyond the small niche of the wrestling fans that you already have. You need the soap opera to grow the brand. Storytelling is the only thing that makes this business in the industry of wrestling, pro wrestling, entertaining. Outside of the soap opera, you're watching two men or two women fake fight. That's all you're watching. You're watching fake fighting. If you don't have the soap opera, if you don't have the theatrics, if you don't have the drama of the bloodline, then you just have two grown men in tights fighting over a prop that doesn't matter. And to most casual wrestling fans, and I'm going to say this, when it comes to people who say they watch wrestling, I'm willing to bet 50 to 60% of them are casual. It's the largest part of the audience. To them, if there is no soap opera, they don't watch the business. They don't watch the episodes. And so when I say objectively from a business standpoint, this isn't sustainable running AEW the way, right? And that's the next point that I want to talk about. James, you so love to use food analogies when you talk about AEW versus WWE. A lot of times your food analogy is you might like chocolate ice cream and AEW might be vanilla, and there's people who like vanilla. Or let's go the opposite, because vanilla is more popular. So WWE's vanilla, AEW's chocolate. You might like vanilla, but chocolate's still something other people may enjoy. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with that argument. No one's arguing that you can't like something different. That's not the argument. The argument isn't the taste of the product. It's about whether or not that product is sustainable. can you sustain long term running AEW the way you're running it right now? And the numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie. You love to say, well, this was the third largest gate. Guys, it was going to be anyway. The three highest gates in your company are overseas shows and starving markets. Please do that in the United States. Please, right, have All In Texas sell out and have a large gate, which it will. I'm not going to say it's not. But have a Collision or a Dynamite sell out for once. When I mean sell out, I mean get a 10,000 seat arena and fill 10,000 people in it. Right? Have a Dynamite have 20,000 people in the stands again. Have a Dynamite that actually gets 800, let's just be generous. Have a Dynamite hit 800,000 viewers. And I know I said ratings will leave in the past, but this leads to my next point. What happens, so we go back to this TV deal where Warner signs a three-year deal that can become a four-year deal if they accept the option. What happens in 3 years? They say, we don't want this no more. We're not going to pick up the option. And there's no evidence that says that any other network would want to take this product. And you don't have a TV brand. And you don't have a TV deal. What happens then? This is what I mean when I say think long term. James, I asked you that question like four times in our group chat that led to you recording that podcast. Never once did you answer that question. What happens in 3 years when you lose, when you lose Warner and no other network wants to add you because the numbers aren't there? Have we ever thought about that? There doesn't appear to be any planning for the long-term future. But your food analogy also fails, not just because you love to use the ice cream analogy. In this particular episode, you used chicken fingers. And you said AEW and WWE can't be the same. And you used the analogy of Zaxby's versus Raising Cane's. And for some reason, you added very, very niche restaurant that's nowhere close to being nationwide and Dave's Hot Chicken, which is crazy because that's what I ate for dinner last night. But you use this analogy and you're like, well, Zaxby's has to add all this other stuff to the menu because they need to differentiate. No. Let me tell you why Zaxby's has everything on the menu. As someone who actually used to work for the company, it was because it didn't start as a fast food restaurant. It started as a casual dining restaurant with the first couple stores were closer to being a bar, closer to like a Buffalo Wild Wings than being like a Raising Cane's type restaurant. Like a fast food style restaurant. It's supposed to be casual dining and finger foods and like a bar scene that's right. And then as the business evolved, it became the first couple Zaxby's that when they started didn't have drive-throughs. It was solely casual dining. But then it slowly, as the business evolved, it changed into a fast food restaurant, and they just kept the same menu, and it's changed throughout the last couple 20 years, right? But see, your analogy fails because you think you know what you're talking about. But also, let's actually dissect this analogy, right? If chicken fingers and fries sell good, like they do at Cane's, why would I not just sell chicken fingers and fries, right? And do exactly right. What's it? Something is the greatest form of flattery. Mimicry is the greatest form of flattery. Like, if it works, it works. Right? There's a reason where if I were to ever start a restaurant, I would do exactly what Raising Cane's is doing. Right? Because the problem with your analogy is you assume that if Zaxby's just did chicken fingers and fries, that the market would say, oh, we can't have two of the same type. That's not how this works. Right? When you get down to the nitty gritty of everything, McDonald's and Wendy's are the same restaurant. When you get down to the nitty gritty. Now, McDonald's has a signature sandwich that's a little bit different than Wendy's signature sandwich, but from a menu perspective, McDonald's and Wendy's, they sell cheeseburgers, chicken nuggets, fries. They both have some sort of frozen treat that you can get, right? It's the same restaurant. And why are they the same? Why did Wendy's copy McDonald's? Because McDonald's worked. So why would I expect AEW to at least try to be similar to WWE? Because the WWE style works, right? And that goes back to a point I made earlier with Omega's entrance. There are parts of the AEW's presentation that copy from WWE, where they see WWE. But it would not surprise me if in 6 months, 8 months, AEW has a drone. And I'm not going to be like, oh, look at, and I may make a little sly comment, say, oh, they copy WWE again. But that's not a negative comment. It's, hey, that worked for WWE to the point that AEW thought it was cool, and they put it into their product. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with AEW copying WWE's product. But when it works, it works. Your analogy didn't work. The only thing your analogy did was make me hungry. Right? And then my final point, right? Because you made this entire episode over a discourse about a report that AEW had to loan out a ring because theirs didn't get there in time. Now, my entire critique about it, I was like, oh, look at this shit show. Look at my entire critique about it wasn't really about the ring. It's not about the ring. The ring is just a side conversation about the larger topic. And that larger discussion is this, and the entire marketing scheme of this, the entire, from when you announced it to the event itself, has just been amateur. It's just been amateur. You announce it without telling us what the event was. All you say is Saturday, excuse me, Saturday. Or at first, you just announced this, we're going to Australia. Right, then you announce that it's going to be in February, which is dumb as shit. WWE learned from that shit, because February is Australia's summer, so it's hot as shit there. Right? And so that is just stupid planning, which again, WWE could get knocked for that when they went to Australia last year for doing it in February, right? You sort of make the fans believe by not telling us that it's not a pay-per-view, that it is a pay-per-view. And again, I broke this down last episode, that why would any fan who sees that you rent out a 40,000-seat arena, or how many ever the initial stadium was, how would anyone not see that as you're doing a pay-per-view, right? But you bit off a little bit more than you could chew, and the tickets weren't selling, so you moved it down to a smaller arena. It then gets announced that this is a collision. Now, you had a very, very good episode, by the way. I would say it was a very average episode. It was what I expect out of AEW. Nothing that would flash me to continue to watch it if I didn't want to. But it was good, right? I'm not going to be negative about the episode. I thought it was decent, right? But now we get to the episode, and you have this tiny ass ring. And this, again, it's not about the ring. It's just, but it's about professionalism. It's about, you look amateur. You had an indie ring. You didn't have real stairs, right? You want the lead in, and then the lead in, what they see is, oh, it's just going to be WWE. And then they look at the setup, and you got a steel barricade that you look amateur. The look of the arena, if you would just of the setup, it looks like you were doing just a normal indie show in front of 1,000 people, the way the setup looked. And so to a fan that hasn't watched wrestling in forever, or maybe has never watched wrestling, this looks amateur. And that's my critique. It's not about the ring, right? But you have a ring setup that's smaller than normal. The ring posts were crooked. Now, there's people saying that the aprons weren't fitted right. I wasn't looking too deep into all of that. I don't care about all that. But you could obviously tell the ring posts were crooked and that the ring was small as hell. And to me, and then there's no steel steps, and they got this little step ladder that they're climbing up to get into the ring. And it looked amateur. It looked like high school gymnasium. It looked very indie. And I'll end this critique before I jump over into the end of the show, which is going to be my Vengeance Day reaction. My final result of this is, it's not about the ring. Whether or not Tony Khan failed to ship it, didn't ship it, planned to rent a ring from an indie company, none of that matters. That's not the point. The point is that you look amateur by doing this. You look very amateur. You don't look top tier. You look second rate. So no, let's wrap this segment up. So no, I don't hate AEW, right? Everyone says, wait, we too deep. You're just a hater. You hate AEW. It's not hatred. My critiques are coming from a place of honesty, a place of concern. Again, if anything, I want AEW to succeed, because we all have recognized that competition makes wrestling better, not just in between AEW and WWE, but TNA has stepped up their game. The indies have to step up their game. Competition makes wrestling better. But if we're being objective, AEW is not good right now. So no, I don't hate AEW. But I think they're making critical mistakes that will cost them their future. And if no one's willing to actually be honest and have this style of conversation where you criticize AEW for their downfall, then they're just speeding up that own downfall. If the fans of the company aren't willing to criticize tiny things. I know this is tiny. I know this is a small detail. Perception is reality. And if you want the lead-in of NBA fans to stick around longer than 10 minutes, that perception has to be that this is WWE, because that's when they think of pro wrestling, that's what those people think about. So when the camera turns on and you got a ring with crooked ring posts, no steps, steel barriers, and flips and kick and no sells and right, it might be fun to watch, but it's not memorable. And wrestling isn't about matches. It's about moments. It's about moments. But this is why I call it a tale of two companies. Because I sat in the crowd at Vengeance Day. And I plan on at some point actually watching the actual Peacock edition of this, so I could hear the commentary and see everything that actually happened, right? On screen. But I want to talk about Vengeance Day from my point of view in the stadium. So let's start about... Let's start with that, right? My experience. First off, it was raining. WWE, the arena, they can't control that. But I got there, and the show started at 6. The ticket said to get there at 5:30. I know how these things work. You got to get there early. I assumed that the doors were going to open at 4:30. They typically, doors open like an hour before the show's supposed to start. I assume with the ticket saying 5:30, the doors would open at 4:30. So I get to my parking area and it to the arena at 4:30. Well, they don't open the doors till 5. So I'm sitting in the freezing rain for half an hour. Right? Just standing out there getting wet, which is fine. It is what it is, right? When we get into the arena, and now I'll be honest, I didn't buy the cheapest or the most expensive ticket. Like if I could have, I would have tried to sit as close as possible. I bought an upper deck seat that was like $20. Right? Now it's a small arena. There's not a bad seat in the house. So anyway, I get into the arena, I get past the security check, scan the ticket in, right? Now this is all important for a reason, right? So I go up to where my section is, and I get there, and that entire section is tarped off. There's a camera there, and I knew this would happen. I had the suspicion they were going to turn this into a camera section. So I go down to one of the people and say, "Hey, man, my seat's tarped. There's a camera. What are we going to do about this?" Oh, we'll go to guest services, right? So I go to guest services, and no one's at the desk. Someone finally gets there. I tell them the problem. They get it solved, right? It took a while, but they got it solved. And I actually got a better seat because of it. Now I'm sitting definitely on the hard cam side, right behind the hard cam. I could see the whole soundboard and everything, right? It's right. But overall, that's fine. It is what it is. No big deal. So then the show starts, right? And now I'm just going to go ahead and say this. This was my favorite ever live show I've ever been to. Like, I went to Vengeance Day 2 years ago, and I don't remember, it was decent, but I don't remember it as much as I'm going to remember this. Right, this card is stacked from top to bottom. You know, I'm a storyline guy. Everything here has stories, right? And so we start with Fallon Henley versus Stephanie Vaquer, and we get Stephanie winning, right? Very, very good match. Stephanie wins. A lot of fun, good match. My dude Milwaukee Mike and me had the same thought. We look. I don't know if it's the little demon horns, if she the devil or what it is, but I'd sell my soul for that. I'd sell my soul for that. I'm just telling you, Stephanie Vaquer is my wrestling crush, right? She's the one. Like, I determined that last night, without a doubt. Stephanie Vaquer is my wrestling crush. She's the one, without a doubt, right? Y'all can have Miss Parker. You know, nerdy, I'll give you Bianca. She's second place for me, but I'll give her Bianca for you, right? Me and Mike gonna have to fight this out. I want Stephanie Vaquer. She's my wrestling crush, no doubt about it. You know, Sol Ruka's up there. There's a new girl, Summer Sorrell, I think is gonna be her wrestling name. She's up there, right? Excuse me. But fantastic way to start the night. You get a new champion, already enjoying this, right? The next match is the tag match, which was the match I was looking the least likely for, but maybe the first contender on my list of the year of match of the year, Fraxium versus Josh Briggs. And I said his name right on Friday. Let me see if I can find it again. His first name. I only wrote his second name. I only wrote his last name on on my notes here. Yoshiki. Yeah, it is. Yoshiki Inomura. I said it right. And so that's great. So I have very little hope for this. Like, I knew Fraction would be great, and they're so fun to watch. They're so fun to watch live. But, and I knew Briggs was very good. I've seen Briggs on the indie scene. I've seen Briggs in NXT. Like, I know Briggs is a – Briggs is – and I heard someone say this behind me. He's a slimmed down big – well, now Big Bill, but like big cats, right? He's slimmed down, but he's athletic in a way. Like, he's – Josh Briggs is great. I love Josh Briggs, right? It was Inomura that I was – I don't know who this is. I don't know – you know, WWE's done a decent job trying to explain – who he is, and he's on loan from New Japan, or not New Japan, from All Japan. Is it All Japan Pro Wrestling? I believe. No. It's Pro Wrestling Noah. Excuse me. He's on loan from Pro Wrestling Noah. And that whole, like, that whole thing, right? And we come out, and Inomura won me over. And I put in Discord that, not my Discord, not the casual, or not the slap and meat one, but the casual wrestling one that Nerdy D runs. I put in there that this is how you get an unknown Japanese star over, right? Now, I don't know how commentary was presenting him. I just know that from in the ring, the crowd loved this dude, had no idea who the hell he was, right? The crowd loved him. When I'm sitting there clapping along with you, like, I don't know who you are, but I'm sitting there starting to enjoy the stuff you're doing. This is how you get an unknown Japanese star over. You don't rely on his Japanese work. You don't make the fans go back and do 20 years of research. You create something new, right? And you can build off of his career, but you create something to add to it. And he was fun. He was powerful, right? But in the end, Fraction won, right? And then they do a little promo talking about, or this was pre-show. They do a little promo talking about, we want to see how we go, how we fare against main roster guys. Which leads me back to maybe, like, are they at Mania? Are they pulling double duty? Right? But then we have Trick versus Eddie. This was the match I kind of actually expected was going to be the worst. I'm not a fan of strap matches. I'm just not. I think this is the first one I've ever saw live. Still not a fan of it. I think it takes a bit of... I don't know. I don't know what it is about strap matches that I don't like. But I told you guys in my predictions that Eddie was winning this match. There was just something that convinced me that Eddie was going to win this match. I feel like Trick is done with NXT, and that was sort of his send-off. And now he'll pop up. Man, if he pops up in Charlotte on Monday Night Raw, let me tell you something. We about to be hype up in that. We're going to yeet for 20 minutes, and we're going to whoop that Trick for 20 minutes. But, yeah, I just I enjoyed it. It was my least favorite of the matches, but, yeah, that was I will say, and I don't know if I'm the only one that had this thought. It was a little bit crazy to see this man Eddie Thorpe sort of like tie Trick to this to the turnbuckle and whip him. I don't know what kind of message that sends during Black History Month. I get it's not that deep, and I would, you know, that's a joke. It's a joke. Like, I'm not actually butthurt about it. If anyone is, they're soft. But I don't know, man. I'm not a fan of strap matches in general. So that sort of makes me biased towards this match. Then we get Javon and Ethan. And everyone in the casual wrestling Discord, I put your predictions, and everyone was saying Javon was going to win. And I said, slow your horses, right? Slow your horses. He's going over at Stand and Deliver. Ethan's winning this match. And that's exactly what happened. Because that gives Ethan more heel. Like, bro, he got booed very badly. Like, booed out of the arena type shit, right? There was that's bullshit type chants going on in the crowd, right? And so through four matches, I'm having a grand old time. I realize that by this point, it's only been like an hour and a half. Had a grand old time so far through this these first four matches. I'm 4-0. We have Oba versus Theory versus Waller, which I know Oba's winning. Like, there's no way they take the titles off of him. And this whole story is sort of really about Waller versus Theory and what happens with them. I expect to see them on Monday to address what happened between them. And so, excuse me. But yeah, this was a fun match. Oba Femi's a tank, dog. Like, he looks big on TV, but like, he's a tank. Like, seeing him in real life, bro's a tank. And then you get the women's four-way match, which I have to rewatch because I was just so in awe of just the night in and of itself and the amount of star power. And I want to go back and watch it again. It was very good from my seat, but I feel like I didn't get the full like presentation. This match, I think I put too much expectation on. Just because I wanted this to be like the greatest women's match of all time. And I don't think it'll reach that much. I still think Bayley versus Sasha at Brooklyn was better. But this was very good. And then overall, like the entirety of this, and then we don't even talk about the new faction that debuts. And I was 2-for-4 in predictions. Shaquan Sugars is one. Cutler James is one. Dion Lennox is part of the group. And the dude with the dreads that I said Keanu Carter, but I wasn't certain about it. That's actually going to be a new guy whose name just got copyrighted. That's going to be Osiris Griffin. That's who Shaquan Sugars tagged. And if that's the case, he's probably going to be the dude that goes after Oba. And that's going to be storytelling in a way that I don't think people understand. This takes a history nerd, right? Oba's from where? Nigeria, right? Osiris Griffin is Egyptian in terms of, like, the mythology, right? So for those who don't know, Osiris is the god of fertility in Egyptian myth. Griffin are the eagles with they're, like, part lion, part eagle, and they got the wings. Those are griffins, right? And so if we do, like, some sort of like Greek or not Greek, some sort of like Egypt, like, cause he's the sort of big guy of the group. So I imagine he's the one going after, I imagine he's going to be the one that goes after Oba, and which is crazy cause he's the newest of the group in terms of wrestling. But I think if they protect him, maybe that's not even the case, that they're just attacking random people. Who knows? But bro, Osiris Griffin already on, bro, he already here. The name just got copyrighted last week. Let me tell you something. He's about to be a star. And all, like, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's Shield 2.0 or Shield and Nexus or Retribution or whatever. I'm gonna give it a chance. I am. And it's crazy because I was super close. Like, you, when you watch on TV, you don't see the setup to the run-in. And so, like, I'm sitting in the corner where I'm sitting in, like, right behind the production, is where two of the guys run out from. And so they start running, and they're just paused there waiting for the sign to go. And I'm saying, oh, shit, who the fuck are these guys? Right? And then I realize who it is, and I'm like, oh, shit, bro. This is great. I'm ecstatic. This event was the best live event I've ever gone to. The best live event I remember going to. Right? But that's that. The bottom line. Let's end it with the bottom line here. The bottom line is there's two different paths. Being, you know, I say a tale of two companies. Tale of Two Shows. Two different paths just got proved here. Now, let's start with one thing. Women's wrestling was the feature of both shows, in my opinion. You started NXT with a very good women's match. You ended it with a very good women's match. Featured. You have Harley and Mercedes and Tony and Mariah with very good matches. Women's wrestling is the winner of Saturday. That's the positive. But here's the bottom line. AEW, if they want to succeed, I think it was Booker T who said it would not surprise him. Not that he wants it to, but it would not surprise him if AEW dies. I want to see if I could find the actual quote. I want to try to. Yeah, this is the thing with. Yeah, I'm not probably going to be able to find it. Oh, there it is. Booker T warns AEW that if they don't start planning better, the company will go under soon. Quote, I could tell you back when I was in WCW and things were just running, everyone thought everything was good just because we were on TV. AEW better be thinking about what's next. You better be thinking about the future. You could wake up one day and it will all be over. A promoter told me a long time ago, you can't just set up a tent and do wrestling. And he's 100% right. And so we'll end it with that. We'll end it with that. I mean, Booker T knows what he's... I mean, Booker T runs a school. He runs a promotion. He's been in the business. That's not me talking. That's Booker. Plan for the future, AEW. Plan for the future. And that's where I'll end it. Thank you all for watching and listening. Like, share, subscribe, share with your friends. Share with your AEW friends, WWE fans. Let us all know what you think in the comments. And until next time, I'll see you on the next episode. Keep calm and remember, slap that meat.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEWWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.